Yippee!
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 Listen, what's the title of this thing? No title again?
Oh, yeah. Listen, if you're a new listener and you were under the impression that this was going to be a funny show, well, this show may not be so funny. In fact, this particular clip that I'm about to tell you about is not going to be funny at all. So if that's what you're after, you can stop playing right now. Talking about something serious here. Fatherhood, I guess. Parenthood. The mistakes we make as adults. I had, up till a moment ago, I was tearing up. Kind of thing you do when you've just made a mistake as a parent. And you feel really shitty and you wish like hell you could wind the clock back and redo it all. You'd wish like hell you just weren't so stupid. I'm sure any of you who are parents, you know what I'm talking about. Sometimes we just make mistakes. We make big mistakes, and it's... and we feel just so shitty about it. Well, that's what I've just done. I don't even know if there's any point in getting into the details. I'm only telling you this now because I just made a phone call and reconnected with my son, and everything is okay, and I'm free to talk. But until that phone call, I just felt even too shitty to even share this with anybody. I was just carrying this burden. It was one of those times, you know, when you start turning to God, even when you claim to be an atheist and you start talking to God, and geez, God, please, teach me, teach me, teach me. Help me not make these mistakes. Fix my head. Very simple thing, just a matter of time. Spirit music. Foo Fighters. Last one my son had to get. He was thrilled. He found it. I tried to get it for Christmas. Couldn't find it anywhere. He picked it up downtown for $10. Nothing Left to Lose, it's called. It's great. I've come to a realization that all my music, you know, my music from my generation, you know, the Beatles, the Stones, Pink Floyd, all the stuff I grew up and rocked out to and got stoned to, especially in the 60s, early 70s, just all that music that meant everything to me. Sorry, I'm gonna fade them out here. Since then, you know, I hear lots and lots of good stuff. I've loved so much of the music. You know, the whole time I was in Japan, I was tuned out, and then just recently, especially with two teenage sons, I started listening again. And man, I put the Foo Fighters right up there, high, right up on the list, like up there with the Beatles to me. I think they're fantastic. I'm sure there's been other groups come along, and I'm sure you have different opinions, but they've just done it for me. And it's really nice to get excited about something. I've mentioned that almost every damn show, but anyway, look, I'm not talking about the Foo Fighters today. I'm talking about something pretty serious. I noticed, you know, sometimes my podcast, you know, you get up on these podcatchers and Ear Ideas and all kinds of places where you find your show listed, which is great. Exciting. It makes you feel, wow, I'm really out there. But sometimes the categories are a little funny, and this show is often categorized as humor. Dixon Jane's, it's humorous. And it is in the sense that life is humorous, but it's really not my intention to make this a funny show. It just comes out that way sometimes. I don't deliberately try and be funny. Sometimes funny things happen, like when I get stressed out and end up with a forklift full of fucks or something. But that's not by design. That just sort of comes out that way, and it could just as easy be something else. Today's going to be a serious show. So this is just a warning for people who have said, hey, I heard about that Dixon Jane's thing. It's supposed to be funny. You're going to be disappointed because it ain't funny. what I have to talk about is not funny. It's pretty serious. And I know, sometimes I say that and I'm completely lying and it's all a joke. This time it's not a joke. It's about death. So, forewarned, if this is not something you're in the mood for now, you just need something light and lively and fun, there's lots of other good shows out there. And I just say, you know, maybe come back to me when you're in a different mood. Don't feel obliged to listen now, because it's probably going to be a bit of a downer. Although for me, it's been another one of life's lessons, and that's what we're here for. And that's what I really think is the thrust of this show. It's about just still, at the ripe old age of 59, still discovering life and learning lessons from life. And learn some, I don't know, how many things these past few days that I feel I want to share with you. I think it'll come easier for those of you out there who are parents and have children and can imagine what it might be like to lose a child. No, I didn't lose my child, but a child in the neighborhood died suddenly and quite unexpectedly. And today I was at the funeral. And it's kind of odd because today is also my younger son's 16th birthday. So for his birthday, he got to stand up there with his friends and attend the funeral of one of his very close buddies, a guy he used to play with. And he had just said, gee, 2 days ago, just or 2 days before he died, he got the call from him. He got some new games for Christmas and wanted to play with them and on his Xbox. And he's gone. So I don't know where to start from this. It's not all going to be a bummer because, I mean, it was an excellent funeral service. I don't get to many of them. This one especially, I've never been to one for somebody young like that, 15 years old. And it was a celebration of his life, and that's what they're trying to do. And it was amazing. I mean, the elderly minister kept referring to Facebook because that's where all the kids had posted all these comments. And at the end of the service, two screens come down, you know, automatically drop down, and there's a slideshow, like a PowerPoint presentation with rock music playing of slides of this young boy throughout his life. Very, very touching pictures. And then finally the last shot that just held there was him with kind of a smile looking out at you. And it really did bring tears to your eyes. Hundreds of people there from the community. Family wanted a private service. And I guess they realized, no, he just had too many friends. It just meant too much to too many people. The parents whose kids used to play with him, the kids who knew him in elementary school. It was a wonderful celebration of his life. I mean, a full life. Man, this kid played hockey. He was heavily into paintball. He had done so much and had a rich, full life. Just totally ending, totally unexpectedly. Not as in an act of violence, just a heart that gave out. And so we all wonder about our own parents. Suddenly you rally around your own families and your neighbors and the other kids who played, and you start talking to parents on the phone who you haven't talked to for a long time. How did you hear the news? So I'll go back to the beginning, that phone call that came. By the way, we've got a limited time here. I'm out in the mall, or in a kind of a strip mall on the corner of Bellamy and Lawrence. I don't know why I have to tell you, but because I guess this is a Scarborough story. I have to tell you where I am because I really am growing attached to Scarborough. And I can look out at a coffee time and a roti place and a KFC and behind me the Pizza Hut where I just ordered for the boys. Because after the funeral service and everybody realizing it was my son's birthday, about five or six of his friends have come over just to play video games and have some pizza and just be together. They've done a good job of supporting each other. Anyway, I got a phone call from mother saying, do you know so-and-so? And I said, yeah, sure. And right away, my guard is up, like, uh-oh, what did my son do? Is he in trouble? That's what I'm thinking, because she sounds a little distraught. And she said he died last night. And I'm just shocked, like, whoa. I mean, I know the parents really well. They're super parents, and that just came through today. Just kind of stunned. But, like, what do you do? My wife's at work. Do I call her? No, I don't call her because there's nothing she can do. She's got to go through work. So the first thing that struck me was, you know, I digested it. I understood the facts. I tried to understand why. I wanted to know. Thought, okay, my son's going to know about this. How am I going to tell him? went to pick up my wife at work and told her, you know, quite without any preparation, just, hey, so-and-so died Sunday night. And she burst into tears. She just started crying, like, shock. And I haven't seen her cry for quite a while. And she just, it was just this outburst. And I thought, whoa, I didn't prepare. I didn't handle that well. But more so, part of me was asking, well, why aren't you crying, Ken? Like, why aren't you feeling what your wife's feeling? And I felt really bad. And I felt bad for a few days. Like, are you really that cold and heartless? These other women you've been talking to, other people are upset and you're not showing it. I felt bad. I felt like I'm not a good guy. It's not my son, so I'm not crying. Is that it? Is you know, what's the story here? Why don't I care? I thought I cared. I think I care. Intellectually, I care. But I wasn't showing it. I wasn't feeling it. I wasn't crying. Well, I cried today at the funeral. I don't mind saying that. And it was almost a relief. And part of me was thinking, okay, hey, men and women are different. I've always said that. And maybe that's just the women just react a little quicker. Maybe. I know it might vary case by case. It hadn't struck home until today when I saw these hundreds of people. And when the father got up and spoke, and I imagine myself in his shoes if it were my son, and the father started talking about the character of his son. And the father's a shy man, and he said, you know, people ask me, are you going to be able to get up here and talk in front of everybody? And he said, I know there's a place where I'm going to get strength. And then he turned and looked at the casket, and he said, the strength is coming from my son right now. He's giving it to me. And maybe you're not connected. Maybe that sounds a little hokey. It wasn't. Like, it was real. Like, he knew he had to do this for his son. And his son was a wonderful, wonderful, wonderful kid. And man, oh man, that just got to me. Like, it was real. And there were several times a couple of cousins got up and they couldn't get through it without crying. And you cried along with them. Everybody was crying. Oh. There's more to it. I don't know quite where else to go or where to go from here. How it affected my son. How I felt about my son. Some of the grief I felt as a father. The crazy feelings of, man, that man up there today is such a good father. And I had a strange, you know, your mind goes off and on one tangent, I'm thinking, now I understand why some conservative people I know don't like Jack Kerouac, don't like Timothy Leary. And these are people I hold up, as you know, as my heroes. And here's Kerouac. He could party, he could drink, he could get stoned. He could do his thing. But he never, ever, ever owned up to the daughter that he had, Jan, who eventually died. Didn't take responsibility there. And I'm only saying that because when I saw this man get up and talk about his son and saw all he had done for his son and all the pictures of all the holidays they'd taken together and the times he spent with his son, I felt, there's a man. There's a real man bringing up children. And it was almost like a 1950s kind of family. It was good. They had relatives and grandparents and aunts and uncles and cousins and get-togethers at Christmas, and there was always family, and he was always doing the right thing, and he had a big trailer, and he took them camping. He took my boys with them. He was a good man who had this terrible grief brought down on him. He has two sons. The elder one's fine. The younger one just died like that. What he said on one of the best days of his life, just after playing paintball with all his buddies. They had a paintball salute. In going in and seeing this, they had this slideshow running. They had pictures and trophies of all the things he had won, all the teams he'd been on, the hockey shirts, the Agent Court Canadians that he played for, and the one whole table for his paintball team. And they had all their paintball rifles set up, lined up, almost in a military style, but it was quite wonderful because that's what he loved. That was his last thing he did. And all his paintball teams showed up. And at the burial site, they fired their markers, not their guns, their markers, and fired a special paintball salute. The end. But I mean, he was a good man and a good father, and Timothy Leary, my hero, well, his first wife committed suicide. You can say not his fault, but a little bit of neglect there. He had about four or five wives. His daughter committed suicide. His son was just went crazy on drugs, spent a lot of time in jail. He wasn't a good man. He wasn't a good father. And I don't know why I'm saying this. It's just that today I saw something else. I struggle within me sometimes. Who am I? Who's the Scarborough dude? Who's Ken? I mean, I was a parent at that school where these kids went to. I was the first school council chair. I'm proud to be a citizen and fit in. And yet I have this other side of me, these heroes, these bad guys, and I cheer them on. Mark Emery, you know, the big dope dealer. And so maybe politically and on many levels, I would be very much against most of the other fathers in this community. I don't fit in with them. And yet today there was a fitting, there was a belonging, that commonality of being a parent, being a father, loving your children, wanting the best for them. And a lot of parents coming together and sharing this loss. Oh, I don't know. I guess I should pause. I guess I should collect my thoughts. I'll just maybe I can just run out of steam here. My son was up there in a suit. He looked good in running shoes because we didn't have black shoes. And three of his friends were up. Each one played a trombone, one a horn, one a trumpet, I guess. And they played a song together. They read the notes. But they wanted my son in there because they were all tight buddies together. The four of them and the boy in the casket, the boy who died. And so my son stood up there in his suit with his friends, just standing, because he couldn't play an instrument. And it wasn't that I felt embarrassed, but I felt bad as a father. Like, he came home one day from elementary school with a tuba. The guy has asthma. He doesn't have the wind to play a bloody tuba. He never learned to play. He just gave up. If I had been a better parent, I would have been in that school. I would have been pounding my fist. What the fuck is this? Like, I can't play a tuba. What else you got? Why didn't I take a more active role? Why did I just let it slide? And so all that feeling of just being a shitty father myself, thinking back to my own father, he wasn't around enough for me. And then you realize, well, it's stupid. You don't beat up on yourself. It doesn't help, but there's my son. He's still a good son. And the other parents said that was so nice of him, so good of him to get up there anyway, without an instrument, just to stand there. And I can feel good about that. And I told my son as I was driving him to the children who were going together that I was ashamed. I felt bad that I wasn't a better father, that I hadn't done more, that I hadn't helped him with music, that I hadn't encouraged him, that I hadn't pushed him, because my kids will just, hey, if I don't have to do it, they won't do it. And maybe I should have tried a little harder, maybe a little more assistant, maybe not backed off so easily when they turn their back, maybe been a little stricter, maybe all those things. Because I guess this is a time when you realize and somebody's gone and you're reflecting about what you've given, what you've had. You reflect also on what you haven't done and what you still have to do. So again, I know maybe if you're a parent, maybe you'll get some of this. And I'm sure all of you out there are better parents than I am. And I'm not feeling sorry for myself. I'm not playing that kind of game at all, believe me. I'm just saying that I want to do more. It's like the thing of, you know, not crying. Like, what's wrong with me? And then today, I cried. I felt it. I'm not so bad. I mean, it was real. It just didn't hit home. It was like my father's funeral. I got the phone call from Ottawa. Your dad's died. I didn't cry. I came home. Told you, first class. Sitting beside me, I'm holding a little bag right now. The bag that I keep my iRiver in from Canadian Airlines, because that's what I was flying. That's the bag they gave me the day I came home, flew home to my father's funeral. And I didn't cry then. I didn't cry until, well, at the funeral service and just before the funeral started. And then, bam, it all came running home. And same with my mother. I was ready for that. Y'all get up there. I'll make a speech. My brother, my sister. Yeah, I can wing it. I can do that stuff. I can just talk off the top of my head. And then realized, no, I don't think I can. I got up there and started crying halfway through my speech. It all came out. That was okay. It's not bad to cry, but Folks, maybe I'll revisit this later. I think the pizzas are ready. I got to get back. It's my son's birthday. We got to salvage the day somehow. I mean, what a thing to imagine. 16 years old. We went out together. He was going to buy the PS3 together, and that's what he wanted. And, you know, he was going to put in. He saved. He's got more money than any of us do, and he'd save some, and we were going to put in some and get him a game and thought about it. And then we went to EB Games, and the guy, and we asked about, do you have a white one? No, it's out in Japan. It's not here. And the Rumble Packs are in Japan. They're not here, and is the price going to come down? No, but I'll tell you, in February it's going to come down. And so I'm sort of thinking, hey, man, if you don't buy it today, if you can just wait, you'll save some money. And my son's thinking, yeah, but if I don't buy it today, you know, I don't have it. And if I rented it, I'd be spending that money. And do I really want to wait? And I kind of said, it's up to you. And so he didn't get it. And they're back home playing the PS2 and having fun. And maybe tomorrow we'll go out and get the PS3. He's already had the N64 with Donkey Kong, the greatest game going, my first exposure. I just loved it. And he's had the little Nintendo handheld set, and he's got a PSP, and they got the PS2, and he wants to move up to the PS3. And I'm saying, hey, yeah, after today, who knows how long your children are going to live? Who knows? I mean, I'm not saying that like that. I'm just saying, hey, you don't know what's going to happen in life. And so enjoy. What if I died? I didn't get to get him this thing. You know? Live. Maybe that's a theme I've always been giving on this show. Live, celebrate, live life, enjoy. I'm glad to say this seemed this young man did. And I just hope my children are. Talk to you later on. We'll get into a different subject. Don't worry.
Hang on. My heart. I don't want to be alone. So here I am getting wasted. The more I drink, the less I'm afraid. I don't want to change the world. What I really want is a girlfriend for life, forever, or for a few hours. I'm sitting here chewing on an ice cube. I better go home. It's 3 a.m. I've been walking all my life. Tonight, I'm taking a taxi, and we're going all the way to the end of his meter. Give me a glass of slush to chase down this scotch that's making me sick. Scotch, Quebec's fête forte.
Funny you should mention scotch. I bought a bottle tonight. That, of course, is CBC Radio. In case there's any misunderstanding, I'm a huge fan of CBC Radio. I listen to it all the time. I just am, you know, and if there's something I find boring, then I'll shut it off. Folks, it's that same day, the day of the funeral. I talked to you earlier about that. I'm almost embarrassed to say I'm feeling good, because you think, well, hey, man. But first of all, you can't change anything. And so you can only hope, given the circumstances that this young man died tragically at a young age, life has to go on. People have to go on. The parents will probably grieve forever, and I'm truly sorry for that. But the other kids go on living, and I've just left my house 5 minutes ago to a living room full, well, 8, 9 kids, I guess, 15, 16 years old. 2 in the kitchen mixing up a craft dinner because somebody wanted some. Cases of pop. They've got the PlayStation going. They had the Xbox going, you know, the one with the guitar, and they can play along with the music. Just noise and having fun. All guys, no girls in there. It wasn't that kind of a party. Just a bunch of the guys just hanging out. And it made me happy. It was I left them alone. I deserted them for the evening. Just said, bam, here's the pizza, here's the pop, here's some ice cream. Go to it, guys. And they did. And it's beautiful. My other son secluded himself upstairs with the computer. My wife was at work. I went out. And, you know, I went out and I thought, I'm going to talk. I got to tell the rest of the story to my Dixon Jane's listeners, you guys. And then another voice, and I always listen to my voices, said, no, you don't. You do something else, something different. Why don't you go visit Tova and Florin? Now, Tova and Florin are a couple who got married, I guess, 2 years ago, and I attended their wedding, and it was a beautiful... He's from Romania. She is Canadian, Jewish background. And it was a wonderful wedding. And I think something in me just knew it was better, instead of me sitting in this car as I'm doing now with the microphone hanging from the windshield visor talking to you, that no, I got to see some real people. I got to talk to someone. And I had an excuse to go. They live in Scarborough, and I had a little package I was supposed to have delivered 4 months ago. So I drove back home, got the package, drove to the place, and Florin, in that wonderful, wonderful European style, just, come in, come in, have a glass of wine. Sit down, have a glass of wine. And I said, well, I'm just dropping a package. Come in, come in. And that wonderful warmth of a true welcome, you know, and bam, sat down, he poured me a glass of wine. Hey, that's nice. Next thing, Tova disappears. Next thing, there's some soup going. Come, have some soup. Well, I'm sitting down. Next thing, I got dinner, a nice lasagna dinner and salad and soup and a wonderful dessert and more wine. And we're talking, and it was wonderful. It was humans, person to person. It's what I'm always talking about on this show. Real people. And they're great people. And before, if I can connect the threads here, weave them together somehow, I talked about how much I admired that some of the parents in the community, the ones who do the, you know, the scouts and the volunteering for this and that. And sometimes I can do that, but still I'm a little bit of an outsider. The Scarborough dude lives in Scarborough, but he doesn't quite entirely fit with the suburban lifestyle, with these people. I mean, conversations could run out quickly. You know, you can't truly reveal all your colors. It depends. It's case by case. But I don't want to be in a situation where I have to be polite. Let's put it that way. Where I have to be on my toes, or I have to be on my best behavior. That's not my idea of relaxing. But Tova and Florin, they're just people, good people. And it was just fun to be with them, and so it was good. And then, you know, right partway through the meal, I got a call on my cell phone. It's my eldest son, the one upstairs, you know, Chuck or Jerry. Dad, can you pick me up a Wendy's or something? I'm starved, because of course there was no pizza left for him. Well, sure. And I thought that was kind of cool. So I went back home and delivered a fast food dinner for my elder son. And I went into the kitchen, and two of the boys who had played the music at the funeral were there, stirring this big pot of Kraft dinner, which nobody really wanted, but they're just doing it for the hell of it, because, you know, what the hell. And they're stirring away, and I slapped one on the shoulder, tapped him on the shoulder, and said, you know, you guys really did a good job today, getting up there in front of everybody and playing that music. And I said, how'd you feel? Were you a little nervous? He said, yeah, we were, you know, it was tough, but Daniel really, really calmed us down. That's Chuck, my youngest son. He really helped us. And that's the thread. You see, never mind the news. We've had enough bad news for today. I was saying earlier how bad I felt about not training Daniel to play one of the instruments like the other boys and not doing it. And it's true. I still feel that way. And if you've got young kids, damn it, put them in a music program, put them in gymnastics, put them in swimming. But, hey, let them have a life, too. You know, they need downtime as well. Don't over-regimate their lives, because, God damn it, you know how fucking regimented our lives get as we get older and how little free time you have. But anyway, I was going on about feeling a little embarrassed and bad my son wasn't up there playing. And one of the sons, without prompting, told me, no, Dan, he was just there. He just calmed us right down. He really helped us. So it was right. You see, there's this thing sometimes we fight things, we struggle, we try to understand, and sometimes if you can do that Zen-like thing of letting go, letting go, let go, let go, let go. Don't fight everything. Go with the flow. It was all right. It was right that he stood there. It's right that we didn't fight about it. And, you know, there'll be fights and there'll be rough spots and nothing is smooth and perfect and you can't sort of live on air and everything is wonderful and you just sort of walk around with that stupid hippie smile, you know. Life's not like that. Life is tough. But you can learn some things. Anyway, that just made me feel good. And it makes me feel good that there's all those boys, like the boy who died would have been amongst that crowd. But there they are carrying on and maybe doing the right thing, really. The way adults, I know, it made me reflect on my own funeral. Hey, man, if I die, I want a party. I want some podcasters there. I want friends there. I want a party. Anyway, here's my wife, so she doesn't... I don't want to be talking in front of her. Okay? Talk to you in a bit.
Another turning point, a fork stuck in the road. Time grabs you by the wrist, directs you where to go. So make the best of this test and don't ask why. It's not a question but a lesson learned in time. It's something unpredictable, but in the end is right. I hope you had the time of your life. So take the photographs and still frames in your mind, hanging on a shelf in good health and good time. Tattoos and memories and dead skin on trial. For what it's worth, it was worth all the while. It's something unpredictable, but in the end is right. I hope you had the time of your life. Something unpredictable, but in the end it's right. I hope you had the time of your life. It's something unpredictable, but in the end it's right. I hope you had the time of your life.
Off to the police station.
Just love it.
Anyway, the next day, I had to appear in Marlborough Street Police Court.
Long John Baldry.
And it was quite a day. Police officer giving his evidence. I was proceeding in a southerly direction, my lord, when I heard a strange sounds coming from the Wardour Place, my lord. A sort of boogie-woogie music was being played. On further investigation, I saw the defendant standing there with a guitar and an old hat on the floor, collecting pennies. Well, I decided that, he was contravening a breach of the peace there, as there was a traffic jam about 5 miles long down Wardour Street, wondering what all the fuss was about. So then I arrested the defendant. Just one moment, officer. Well, what is this boogie-woogie music here we're talking about? Oh, well, my lord, said the officer, getting out his notebook, obviously been doing up his homework. It's a kind of jazz rhythm music peculiar to the American Negro. What was the defendant doing playing this kind of music there in Wardour Street? Anyway, I got off with a caution. A year's conditional discharge. But I'll always remember that policeman and his bougie woogie. So don't try to lay no bougie woogie on the kingdom of rock and roll.
Yeah, take it away. Yeah. Okay, folks. You want that record? You go back and you listen to your own copy. You can purchase that. That's Long John Baldry. Passed away just recently, as you may well remember. Love that song. Saw him live at a place called Goofy's. Formerly a discotheque. Well, it was a discotheque when it got that stupid name Goofy's. What was it called before then? North Vancouver, West 2nd Avenue, just off Lonsdale. I saw Pied Pear there, too. They were a group formerly... Was it Pied Pumpkin? Good stuff way back then. But that was the nightmare of the disco era that I woke up into. I remember walking into this place. Stone, just smoked up. My little place, I told you, my little place up on Lonsdale and West 3rd. Walked down, check out this place, Goofy's. And I walked in and holy fuck. Guys with chains and suits and gold, and I entered this time warp. Whoa! Where'd all the hippies go? Who are these freaks in their three-piece suits and these girls in their purses and party dresses dancing disco to Dawn of Summer? What the fuck? Whoa! What's happened? Anyway, that's not on the list today. I'd like to call your attention. All right, call to order. The agenda for today. So, welcome. This is a meeting between the Scarborough Dude of the Dixon Janes podcast and my faithful, loyal, wonderful, and, let me add, intelligent and well-informed listeners out there. The date is January 13th, 2008. The time is approximately 11:40 in the morning. The location is the usual handicap zone, right here up on the mount where I do the Sunday sermons in front of the Scarborough Civic Center. Nobody else in sight today, no weddings, nothing else going on, that's fine. And I'd like to just go through the agenda for today, what we are going to do. We're going to review our last minutes of the last time we met. Then we will get on to some clarification, some omissions perhaps on the Foo Fighters and the Beatles. I think there was a little bit of misunderstanding on those points. And then a little bit more about teens, violence, the high school system, especially here in Toronto. I'm not sure how long we'll spend on that. We'll see how it goes. I might get bored very quickly, as might you. And then on to new business, because we've always got to have new business. So are you ready? I'd like to proceed right away. What I was saying about the Foo Fighters. Listen, I just think brilliant songwriters, great musicians, great, great delivery in their singing. Love it, love it, love it. And I was saying this is the group that, wow, since, you know, my era of music that really, really grabbed a hold of me, this is the first one that's really, I can say, wow, I'm a Foo Fighters fan. And I love it because it's my teenage son gave it to me. Just insisted, Dad, you got to listen to this, you got to listen to this. That's beautiful. That's just great, you know. But the thing about the Beatles and Pink Floyd, this is, by the way, Psychedelic Weekend here on Q107, all Pink Floyd, okay, or majoring in Pink Floyd. Anyway, the point about the Beatles was they took us from being these little guys singing I Want to Hold Your Hand and these cutesy songs when you're just a little pup yourself falling in love, you know, to, holy fuck, they discover pot. And then they discover acid. And this whole generation that knew them from these innocent young lads from Liverpool with these cute mop-top haircuts suddenly took us on this ride. Through drugs, through discovery, through Eastern mysticism, they were our gurus. And they had their own, they followed, of course. But they are the ones who put it out there for us. And that's the power. It wasn't just the music. It was, wow, we're following the growth. I mean, you look at the pictures of them, you kill them guys, and suddenly you got George Harrison, hair down way past his shoulders, his long beard and these strange clothes, and living in this mansion, and all the things that were happening, and man... That was just so exciting to ride along with them. And that's something that they spoke to us. And that's something that nobody, you know, now, you know, maybe somebody said Frank Sinatra spoke to them. Yeah, okay. All right, yeah. But Wow. That was a whole generational thing. By the way, little aside here, watching History Television, Channel 54 here, doesn't matter, but History TV on the cable, and they had a book called, they had a writer on who wrote a book called The Anderson Affair, Perry Anderson, biology professor at my old alma mater, Sir George Williams University, now known as Concordia. And it was the entire story of the Sir George riot. God, that was exciting, because it was like black and white. It was history. You're looking, it's like the assassination of Martin Luther King. It was amazing. A one-hour history program of documentary footage and then interviewing the people who had been involved back then on various sides, you know, the youth now, you know, people my age. And I looked at those scenes, and I just kept looking for myself because I was right there in that auditorium when all these people were taking it over. It was an amazing, amazing story. And it's funny. I mean, that was the biggest event in the 60s, 69 it was, in Canadian history, you know, I mean, in student history, in student uprisings, you know. The trick was, okay, there is racism in Canada. We're going to expose it. And this is a time, the height of the anti-Vietnam War movement and so on. It was powerful. They ended up seizing staff, seizing the university lounge, seizing the computer room, and somebody put the axes to all the entire mainframe computer system and showered the streets of Montreal. Riot police called in. Students from the outside being blocked from getting in because they wanted to take it over, like a real polarization. And boy, if there weren't any signs of racism before this, there sure were after, because there was a group outside saying, pardon my language, let's get those niggers. Like, they were out, and holy shit, police keeping the side separately. Nobody died. Minimal jail sentences. One of the people, keep forgetting his name, went on to be president of one of the Caribbean islands. I'm sorry, I should have been more informed, but if you are interested, just Google that. Sir George, SGWU, Sir George Williams University, the riot. 69. Very interesting. And I was just sitting there like, holy fuck, I was a part of that history. I was sitting in that, listening to, watching it unfold, you know? Standing outside wanting to get in, and it had been taken over. University shut down, and man, oh man, I told you, I met the sister of the professor who had been accused of all that at a dinner in the Ontario government offices in Tokyo years later. And anyway, that wasn't on the list for today. What was on the list? Okay. Folks, I'm not a very good chairperson. You know, hey, let's fuck that agenda. Fuck it. Out the fucking window. Fuck it. By the way, I'd like to say something. Just because I'm part of the handicapped parking spot doesn't mean I'm handicapped. Okay? Now, I'm saying that for one reason. It's pretty rude. It's not very funny. Maybe Gary might laugh. I don't know. But it's not funny, okay? Making fun of somebody with either mentally handicapped, physically handicapped, whatever, just because I'm parked in the handicapped parking lot. I'm doing it for one reason. Not for a cheap laugh, no. Because I wasn't going to do it. I thought about it. I thought that little voice came up to me, and I was going to say something along that line. And I thought, oh, you know, if you say that, and what if this crossover that we're getting onto, okay, here's the crux. We're talking about the crossover between yourself, your image, your brand. I'm using little quotation marks, right? Fingers up in the air. Can see them in the rear view mirrors. My brand as the Scarborough dude. And then the real self who wants to run this mediation business. And if for some reason somebody checking me out, checking my references as a mediator, happened to cross-reference and find the Scarborough dude, one and the same person, finds me making fun of handicapped people. That's not politically correct. And I guess I'm fighting just a little bit. It's like this whole issue of how much does Facebook know about you? How much do we have to hide? And I don't want to hide. So I did that only to make a point to say, okay, number one, if you really want to know who I am, you'll know that I spent 5 years really devoting every ounce of my energy and I'd go on to say love to mentally handicapped. At the time, they were called mentally retarded. The organizations were in group homes and in sheltered workshops. And I truly loved it. My life was changed by it. I was touched by the love and gentleness of so many people who just in their very own special way made this a better world. And I mean that sincerely, and touched by the love and concern of their parents, and the love they showed for each other, how the handicapped looked out for each other. Betty and Ken, two elderly people. Betty, who wasn't really mentally handicapped, but had severe cerebral palsy. Nobody knew what to do with her back in the old days. She was an older lady at that point. They just put her in a home so she wouldn't get any education. But she knew what she was doing, but she just had no control over her hands. So when it came to the task at the shelter workshop, okay, we need 10 screws in each of these boxes. How are we going to do that? These guys can't count to three. We'll make a little hole, little block, wooden block, drill 10 holes. Okay, guys, fill the holes. And as soon as all the holes are filled, they can do that. You take each one of those things out, because that's your number 10. There's 10 holes there. Never mind the numbers, never mind the math. Just fill the holes with a screw. Here's the screws from this pile only. And then take them out and put them in this little plastic box. You can do that. And with a little bit of training, they could do that. Well, Betty couldn't. Betty can count to 10, no problem. Betty is smart. There's nothing wrong with her mentally except that she's been locked away. But Betty couldn't get that screw into her hand and get it anywhere near that damn hole, so we tried to get Betty on other tasks. But Ken, this gentle, loving, loving, kind man, whose father was an artist and who just happened to have been born, and he was just like a big boy, and you just loved, you wanted to hug him every time you saw him, and I really mean that. So kind and gentle and just like a little boy, but oh, everybody who met Ken just was taken in by his something about him. He had an aura, and yet he couldn't count to three, and he'd get all confused and frustrated, and Betty would try to help Ken, and the two of them would sit beside each other because they were the older and they were more mature, and you just, oh boy, I loved those times. So that's who I am, okay? And the fact that I might make a stupid joke and put on a retarded voice is to say, we can't judge each other by little superficialities, by silly little things. And we can't live in a world where we're afraid to cross lines and experiment and do things. Like afraid, uh-oh, gee, if I say that, what about this? And always covering our ass, because that's the problem. That's the problem in the education system today. You've got all these bloody superintendents working their way up the ladder because, man, they get a pretty dang good salary and a nice office and a secretary if you're a superintendent. And power, but they cover their ass because they don't want to take the heat for what's going on. And boy, oh boy, they sure as hell don't want to be called racist if there's a lot of black kids failing in the school system here. And that seems to be what's happening. So some people are saying, we need a black school. And a bunch of them are going to say, okay, if that's what they want. And a lot of other people think, hey, this is Canada. We're supposed to be inclusive. You separate people, you take black people out of the education system to make a school for themselves because why? Because teachers are racist? I don't know. What about all this violence, all the shooting and all these things that are going on? And oh, it's so easy to say, yeah, well, it's fucking gangers killing fucking gangers. You know, you see that on the streets, you know? And these people who keep saying, oh, my kid was a wonderful kid, he didn't do anything. And I'm sort of hardened a little bit and say, yeah, well, I don't know. And then these people blaming the school system for its built-in racism, for its failing these kids and so on. And you take this hardened attitude, yeah, well, how come these other groups? How come the Chinese? How come the Indian population? Well, except for the Sri Lankans, how come these others aren't failing? And so you find yourself with a certain amount of prejudice yourself and think, hey, what's the problem here? Is it maybe outside the school? Is it maybe the home life that some of these kids have? Is that maybe the problem? Because it isn't just the fact of being a single parent. Because the nicest boy I spoke to last night, when my son had his eight friends over and they were playing video games and they were all teens right across the spectrum, and man, they were great kids. Well, the nicest one just happened to have a single parent. That's not the issue. Maybe what you teach at home, maybe it's not just the school's fault about all this. But if you're not in Toronto, maybe you don't care. That's what the newspaper said today. Yeah, this isn't happening in rural Ontario, and this isn't happening in the rest of Canada, but The point of the argument was, yeah, if this kid's shot in school, and if a school board is talking about bringing in dogs to sniff out lockers for weapons, this is not just a Toronto problem. This is Canada. It's the same, the people dying on the street in Vancouver, East Vancouver, lying on the sidewalk, overdoses from drugs, beaten up in the alleyways, horrible, horrible-looking crack whores just dying for their next fix. Oh, that is Canada's shame. That is not an East End Vancouver problem. That is a Canadian problem that needs Canadian dealing with, okay? All these issues affect all of us. I talked about our little community at the funeral last night, and that was great. And it was wonderful because the people in all these little neighboring houses drew together and said, well, we've got to keep an eye on the parent family, you know, because they're going to be pretty upset after all this is over. We got to take turns visiting them and so on. Community pulled together. We've got to learn to do that as a country, too. How do we make these communities? Hey, guess what? Podcasting is a real beautiful national community. Hey, welcome international listeners. And don't get me wrong. I'm not excluding anybody here. In fact, what we need beyond that Canadian problem is a worldwide community of people caring and listening and sharing and helping. And I love it. It's part of what I love about podcasting. I love these new connections I'm making. Guess what, folks? I'll just whisper this part about Mitch fucking Joel listens to the Dixon Janes podcast. Okay, I'm not going to say that again. And one little note here, and Mitch, this is just for you. You, and only you, you are allowed to use the fast forward button. Because lots of people, they don't, I mean, how the hell would a guy like you have the time? Here you are, you're off. You can't even go to PodCamp Toronto because you're going to a dozen other conferences. You're speaking. You're, holy fuck, you're on stage with Anthony fucking Robbins. So, honored, thank you. But Mitch, you have my full permission. No penalty. And this does not go to anybody else. Nobody else has this Mitch touch. Mitch is allowed to push the fast forward button on the Dixon Janes podcast. That's it. I'm not going to say any more about that, okay? Next item on the agenda, what was it? New business? I think we finished with the school board. It's sad, but one last tangent. Hopefully, fuck, we're still recording. Yes, we are, and we're just about done. During that funeral service yesterday, when I saw how much people cared and I listened to the father talking about his son, I looked at all the pictures of the father and the son sharing. You know what I felt? And this just amazed me. And when I was in the funeral home and I saw all the pictures and all the guests coming and sharing and grieving together and hugging, I felt really bad for all those kids who have been killed through acts of violence here in Toronto for various reasons, who probably never had, many of them, the kind of love and care and support that this young man who died yesterday. This man had a rich and full life, this young man, tragic as it may be. But it really, for the first time, kind of opened my eyes. I don't know, it was just one of those flashes that I've sort of resented these kids who've just been, you know, shot. Like I say, it's, well, they've brought it on themselves somehow. They're there and some bastard has fathered, you know, a dozen kids and doesn't live with any of the women, and the women have got children from three different husbands and so on. And so I've got my biases, I've got my prejudices. There's some, even some frustration and anger. Why? What the fuck do you expect? You know? Go in and blame the school, accused of racism. What? Just bring up your own fucking kids properly. Teach them. You don't go out and kill, fight, shoot, steal, whatever. Grope. I mean, one of the huge incidents that came out of this school report that was just released. That's why the big fuss in Toronto. The number of sexual assaults within the schools of girls being groped, threatened, dragged into boys' washrooms. I mean, those are the reported ones. Frightening, horrible. Holy fuck, my kids sure aren't going to do that. Well, we've taught some values, and this family had, and so you blame some of the parents. Where the fuck were you? And then you realize, wait a minute. Think about those poor kids. And this is something I don't do often enough, is care about other people. Care about the misfortunate, the unfortunate. Who don't have fathers, who don't have role models, who don't have love, who don't have money, who don't get Christmas presents, who don't get birthdays celebrated, who just get abuse and crap, and their only support group is the gang, the other kids out there. And that's sad, and that's got to be addressed. I don't know how. I don't know how. But I can't just sort of point this finger of blame anymore. That was a lesson that came out of yesterday, a very peculiar one, but clearly the example was, here's a kid who's just been raised in love and good guidance and He was fortunate in the years he was on Earth. And all these other kids, so many of them just go through a life of just suffering. By the time they're 15, they've just been through hell. And I'm sorry about that. I really am. Oh, was there anything else, folks? I don't have any notes with me today. Oh, I do have, closing off, the book for, you know, all these marketers, all these new books come out. You know, I'm reading now. I'm reading, you know, the blogs more. I'm listening to other things. I'm very interested in new media and all this stuff and what's going on. And I wonder if anybody out there raving about all these books, what was it? Not tomato soup, hamburger soup, meatball tomatoes, meatball stew. What is that book that everybody was raving about? Meatball Sunday. There you are. I don't know. I'm not going to read it. I never have read it. But, you know, it's the book. Ooh, whoa, this guy's got some. But what about the book I'm holding in my hand? This big fat Bible by this man, Lawrence Bolt, called Zen and the Art of Making a Living, A Practical Guide to Creative Career Design. Work is more than a matter of keeping busy all day. It must feed the soul as well. Lawrence Bolt has done a splendid job of explaining the truth. I commend this book to all thoughtful readers and seekers. That's from the man, Richard Bowles, no relation, who wrote What Color Is Your Parachute? Fantastic, fantastic book. I just opened it random. I can't get through. I mean, it's not the book you'd read cover to cover. It's, 600 and something pages. I just flip through for the random quotes. Who gives the bread lays down the law. That's about social change and organization. Action is doing something. Reacting is having it happen. Here we are. Marketing warriors understand that their biggest enemy is their own lack of knowledge. I don't know. Oop, handicap bar pulled up beside me. And it's real old-fashioned, physically handicapped people. If we want to make something really superb of this planet, there is nothing whatever that can stop us. I like that. That's vision on the section on vision questing. Live the questions now. That's by Rilke. I don't know, a million things, and it's, you know, it's foolish of me to flip through here and read out random quotes to you, because that ain't going to help you. I just highly recommend this book, okay? The Tao was near, and people seek it far away. That's a good one. That's a good one. Shall we read what the 14th Dalai Lama had to say? Let's read it. I don't know what it is. You see, I'm looking blind, so I don't know if this is going to be good or bad, but you know I don't edit and pull out and sneak in clever little quotes. That's not the way the dude works. We begin from the recognition that all beings cherish happiness and do not want suffering. It then becomes both morally wrong and pragmatically unwise to pursue only one's own happiness, oblivious to the feelings and aspirations of all others who surround us as members of the same human family. The wiser course is to think of others when pursuing our own happiness. Now, that is a dandy, and you know, there's a random quote, folks, come on, you know, you saw the process, I flipped through the book, I read about half a dozen, this sums it all up. Sums up just what I've talked about those poor kids, about life, about living. Listen, once more, all right? We begin from the recognition that all beings cherish happiness and do not want suffering. It then becomes both morally wrong and pragmatically unwise to pursue only one's own happiness, oblivious to the feelings and aspirations of all others who surround us as members of the same human family. The wiser course is to think of others when pursuing our own happiness. If you need to rewind, listen again, go ahead. Folks, that wraps it up. That's my Sermon from the Mount Sunday. I love this part. If ever I have to streamline this show down to 20 minutes, I will simply come on a Sunday morning and give you a 20-minute sermon. But instead, I will intersperse a little bit of music and those other stray clips and let you put it all together. I hope you enjoyed sharing this hour with me this week, and it's certainly been my pleasure to talk to you. It gives me a tremendous sense of satisfaction, and it completes my week. I mean, you don't know how badly I need to do this podcast. It just gives me a sense of making sense of my own life, sharing it with you like that. I can't talk to other people quite this same way, and I can't certainly email all this and share it that way, and the only way for me to do it is to talk and unload as I have just done. So that's why I conclude all my shows basically with thanking you for listening from the heart. It's the dude, and bye-bye.